Well, well, welcome to Between Sundays. I'm Tyler, and I don't want to say anything stupid, but it's so good we're here. Let's make some shelters. Today we discuss the Transfiguration, but before we ask to touch the hands, now that they don't really know what else to say, for they are terrified, let's welcome in our favorite ham-fisted co-hosts of Thunder, Marin and Barry. Good day, guys.
Here we are. Ham-fisted and everything. Yep.
Co-hosts of Thunder. Yeah. I like that.
That's you. That's you guys.
Sons of Thunder. That's.
Can I touch the hands?
Marin. You know.
Thank you for sharing with us your cringiest.
Yeah, there's a lot of people around that just are like, I want to be cool, you know. You know, like Marin, I want to be cool.
There's literally no one around like that.
And then we hear about the can I touch the hand story. That's the least cool thing I've ever heard. You know how many people, though, were like, Tyler, do you have a can I touch the hand story?
I know
story?
You both do, and I want to hear it. I know you both
I
do.
I do. But I don't know if it's the same, like, it was definitely trying to fill silent, like,
so
space.
We could talk about it. I'm sure you have some family business for us, but.
Yeah, we got some family
business. I did get some pretty strong responses from some members of our congregation who had similar
cringe moments.
And they're great. They're fantastic.
I heard a couple as well.
Yeah, family business. We're going to dig into the transformation or transfiguration today.
Transfiguration.
Matthew 17 here in a few moments. But first, we got to let you know it's opening night week.
Sure, that's what they call it.
It's opening night week.
It's opening night week.
Otherwise known as Tech Week.
Yeah. Well, that was last week.
They changed it up and did Tech Week a week early to give themselves extra breathing room because there's a lot of technical stuff in this show. Spoiler alert. So this week is dress rehearsal week.
Aha.
Got a couple dress rehearsals.
Yeah. So what is it? Friday, we do the school show.
Yep.
And then opening night, Friday night.
I can't wait. I'm so excited.
Can't wait. There's still some tickets left. We've sold, I think,
three quarters at least.
Yeah. We've sold over 5,500.
Probably a quarter of those to me and my family.
Yeah, Jed's real thrilled about that. there are still some tickets available, but you got to go to gracechurch.us/theater to get that. Yeah. Also, Christmas store is open. You know, the Christmas store is something we do every year where we get to support care center friends who need a little bit of extra help getting Christmas presents for their families. And so we, as the Congregation of Grace, and anyone really, can go to Grace's website and donate money to purchase gifts. And then our care center team will go to the store and literally buy gifts for the Christmas store. And we stock the shelves. It's a great experience for our care center friends. So you can do that on our website as well, Christmas store.
Can I just say, it's got to be probably one of the highlights of my year going and hanging out at the Christmas store. And for those of you friends of the pod who aren't aware, like our food pantry is all choice. It's like a grocery store. You go in with points and you can get the groceries that you want, that you need, that are right for your family. And we treat our Christmas store the same way. Parents can come in and based on the number of kids and the ages, they get to choose the toys or gifts for their kids. And it's all kinds of stuff. It's toy trucks. It's footballs. It's drawing kits. It's video games. Yeah. It's everything you
can
think of.
There were drones last year.
And stuff for teenagers as well. There's
totally.
There's makeup. There's like, all ages. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's
Even
really
gift
cool.
gift cards.
Right.
Yeah.
It's awesome. And what I love is it's just dignifying. It's we're not saying, hey, here's a box of secondhand toys that you get to sift through. It's like, no, you get to pick the thing that you want and you've chosen it and your kid gets the gift. And like, it's not about presents. Like, that's not what Christmas is all about.
Yeah.
And yet being able to meet people in a time that's often the most stressful, most painful time. It's beautiful. And I love that our volunteers inevitably take things and our staff take things to the next level. Like if there are toys that have batteries, they will make sure that the parents go home with a set of batteries so the kids can play with the toys on Christmas morning. And I'm just like, I love it. I just love it.
Great.
I'm not like a huge Christmas person, but I am a Christmas store person.
You're not a Christmas
all the way.
Person.
I'm like, it doesn't, it's fine.
What?
I'm a Thanksgiving guy, dude.
Oh my goodness.
I'm a Thanksgiving guy.
You can be
guy.
Both.
I'm with you there.
Okay. But I'm a Thanksgiving guy.
I mean, you can be both. Yeah. I'm a Thanksgiving guy. I also like Christmas.
For me, Christmas and Thanksgiving They're kind of one because the tradition is to decorate the day after Thanksgiving.
Ah.
So like
yes.
the Christmas
not
wow.
This year, though.
The Christmas wow comes. Oh, definitely this year. Yeah.
Not for us.
Not for you
ours
guys.
Ours is already up. Oh. Our
really?
Yeah, tree's
see?
Already up.
Everybody's Liv, going Liv very
wanted,
early this year.
Liv
seriously?
Wanted to get it up. She was yeah. just feeling it. And so some of the family came over and we had
yeah.
good for you.
As soon
guys.
As Halloween was over, you started seeing all kinds
oh
of stuff
goodness.
Going up.
Yeah.
That's what the kids are doing these days.
Yeah, we're doing it this weekend. We're putting the tree up.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that's too much tree. I don't want a tree.
Too much tree?
I don't want a tree like while I'm having Thanksgiving dinner. That clashes.
Well, we don't, yeah. We don't have Thanksgiving dinner at my house.
Well, that's all right then. That's yeah. fine.
Speaking of Thanksgiving, we've got, I misspoke last week. I said we only had two shows left. But we're doing shows between Sundays all the way through November, including November 30th.
Excellent.
Which is, the show will come out in December, but it's a November 30th sermon. So we've got a couple more left.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
I'm so glad.
You know?
Yeah. We're going to bring, is it a surprise?
Nobody knows, but it's
well,
not a
breaking news.
Very few people
You're hearing
know.
It here first.
Jose Luis.
Yes.
What's his, Gonzalez. Mm-hmm. I always think his last name's Luis.
Nope.
Jose Luis Gonzalez is going to be preaching.
Yeah.
For the first time at Grace
Thanksgiving
Church,
Sunday.
Thanksgiving Sunday.
Yep.
And, yeah, we're going to bring him on here. Hopefully. We gotta schedule it, but we're going to bring him on Monday and do the show.
Love it.
Yeah. Guys, what's new? What's going on?
I'll keep it short. I'll just say I'm very much husband of the Wicked Witch these days. Because Liv
does
is
that mean?
Well, Liv's very much, I mean, we're getting on towards the show, and this is the biggest role she's ever had, and she's like... just having a ball and is really, really getting into it both with her role, but also like people have been giving her Wicked Witch gifts and
oh,
squishmallows
yeah.
and posters, all kinds of stuff. And then now Paige, her niece, our niece, is obsessed with, you know, Wizard of Oz stuff and
yeah.
is getting dolls and dressing up like, yeah, all it's all the stuff.
Paige is number one fan. Because last year, Olivia was in Joseph.
Yes.
And Paige, every time she came to your house, wanted yeah. to watch Joseph.
She just stopped listening to that music about yeah. a month ago yeah. and has transitioned over to Wizard of Oz yeah. music. Yeah. Yeah. She's a big fan.
You told me yesterday that Olivia doesn't have to go to some of the rehearsals because she's not dancing.
Right.
Which when is like, man, if I would have known that was part of the deal, I would have tried out for the witch.
yeah.
if I don't have to dance.
It's a unique role because she's in... I mean, she has some real quick changes. Like, she goes from Miss Gulch to
yeah.
Wicked Witch pretty quickly. So she's got to get green.
Yeah.
She's got to change
yeah.
costumes and all that. But, yeah, she's not in a lot. You know, they're singing tra-la-la-la-la. The Wicked Witch
yeah.
is dead, and she's not there.
Does she sing? Does the witch have
nope.
a...
Wow.
What a deal. I would have totally done that.
nope, just an acting role. She right. does, well, I won't spoil too much, but
yeah.
she does have special effects. I'll just
have
say that.
Have you yeah. seen any of the rehearsals? Because
mm-hmm.
Desi's in it, and mm-hmm. I have purposely, like, seen nothing. I've stayed
yeah.
away.
I have seen bits and pieces. I've popped in here and there. I sat through one of the tech rehearsals, part of it, while they were working on Munchkin Land, and they're singing Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead. I had... a big stupid grin on my face the entire time. It's colorful. Everyone's dancing and singing, and it's amazing. And the orchestra sounds great. I'm just like, okay, this is going to be just the coolest. I can't
Does
wait.
It make it like less knowing that, I don't know, I don't even know the story of Wicked, but isn't the Wicked Witch not Wicked?
Well, but that's not necessarily canon. That's a whole spinoff.
Which also comes out this weekend.
It does, the second
Another
movie.
Reason
yeah,
to buy
yeah,
your
yeah.
Wizard of Oz tickets. Just
yeah.
Yeah,
refresh yourself
the
on
weekend.
The story. Yeah,
yeah. Maren, what's new with you?
Well, I'm done preaching, so that is what is
yeah.
new. I have been
God rules.
Completely consumed with the tasks before me, and
what does that mean
that
exactly? What have you been consumed with?
Well, like Wednesday, the notes were due. Sermon notes are usually always due Wednesday, like around 5 o'clock or something. And so I worked right up until the deadline and
yeah.
then some to be able to get the notes turned in on time. But then right after that, I had to go read Jeremiah because I had
school.
A quiz to take the next day and a class to take the next day. So
yeah.
that's how it's been going. Just very few breaks in between the things. And
yeah.
so when one major kind of task is behind me, I feel like, I can focus on fewer major tasks.
Yeah. So that's done. Is this the last time you're preaching this year?
Yes.
And then you kick us off 26.
Yes. I preach the first Sunday in January. However, the notes are due December 17th. My final paper is due like December 14th. So we're just...
We got a couple days.
I have like a couple of days where I can breathe, and I plan on breathing.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. What's your paper going to be on?
Don't know.
I asked already. She doesn't know.
Okay.
No. Right. Well, this is different. The last class was like a research paper. This is pick a passage from the Old Testament and basically exegete the passage, which for some people in my class, they've never done. But for me, because
you can do this in your sleep.
You know? Yeah. I'm hoping it won't be as stressful as the last one.
All right. speaking of reading, you're looking at a member of a brand new book club.
Is that right?
Yep. I am in a book club now.
Wait. Is it for the book that you just finished reading?
No. It's for a different book.
Okay. Is it as gigantic as the book you just finished reading?
No. Yeah, nobody would be in a book club about that.
We were on the lead team retreat, and you had a book the size of, like,
a brick.
Humongous.
Yeah. No, it's not about that book, although I wish it was, because all I want to do right now is talk about that book. I wish this podcast was about that book. a couple months ago, my family got together with some like high school friends' families, and my wife's in a book club, but I'm not. And the guy who we went to his house, he was kind of like, man, I want to start a book club. And I just said, all right, I'll do it. And so we read our first book. We have our first book club meeting tomorrow. And I don't know really what to expect.
What's the book?
The book is called The Night Watch.
Is it by, like fiction?
Julianne Phillips. Yeah, it's a historical fiction about kind of like about Civil War era. Very depressing book. But it won a Pulitzer Prize, which is why we chose to read it.
Okay.
So I don't know. I don't know what you like. I feel very nervous.
I've never been in a book club.
I'm going to have a let me touch the hand moment at the book club because I don't know what to say.
Snacks?
We're going to like a restaurant.
Did anyone give you like questions ahead of time to like think about?
No, I feel like I need to take charge. I need to come with prepared questions because all of a sudden I feel like I need to lead this thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't know what to expect.
It's not a Bible study. It's a book club.
But what do you do at a book club?
You eat snacks.
And what? You have to talk about the book.
So
you go around the circle once being like, yeah, it was 3 out of 5. But you have to say more. You have to do more than just that.
I really like the part where...
Yeah. 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 Well, there's not much to like about this, but it was just sad. I mean, the writing is excellent. The book, great, but it's just like... I feel it's one of those books that like you feel bad if you're like that was a really great book because so many bad things happened to the main character.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. So then the next time around, do you pick like a?
I don't know really how. I don't know.
Sunny, you know.
He's
optimistic.
He's a novice. We're asking the wrong guy questions. Yeah. We need to find out after your first.
I don't
book
know. It was like a group decision on this book, I guess. But I feel like I got to take charge.
At least of the snacks.
Yeah, that. But also like. This isn't my style of book.
Yeah. Next time it's your style.
Yeah. If we're going to go a couple months in between reading, I think we need a more like, this book was like 250 pages.
Too short.
We need
something you could sink your teeth
into. Yeah, 700 pager, something like that. So that's what's new with me. Also, I'm going away this week.
Yeah.
I'm going to the woods. And
any particular woods or just
I actually don't know exactly which woods, but going away, it's not really like a retreat. It's like we've got a lot of work to do in the next 3 years, and I said I would do some of it, and so I don't have time in like normal days to do it, and so I'm going to the woods to do it.
Going to work a work retreat.
Hammer it out.
I always call those writing retreats because that's where I get like a lot of my writing done sometimes. Yeah. I do that a few times.
Yeah,
here.
So
it's worth it.
I'm doing that by myself, which is great. Lauren was like, since you're doing that, does that mean I get to go get a mani-pedi?
Okay. All right. Give and take. I like it. I like to see it. How do you feed yourself when you are away?
Great question. I don't know.
Solo trip.
I don't know. I don't even know if there's things around this place.
Okay.
So I got to come prepared.
with like some Lean Cuisine meals.
Yeah, like frozen pizza, Sour Patch Kids. I don't know. I don't know what you do.
I've been there before. I can give you the lowdown. All right, there's nothing around.
Oh, great. Maybe, yeah, I gotta come prepared.
There's
a
staff person here. You'll know who I'm talking about, but I will not mention him by name. His wife
Marcus
was
Castile.
Away. His wife was away a while back, and I found out he had a half of a grapefruit and some gummy bears for dinner.
Jed Gaffron.
No way. No
half
way.
Half of a grapefruit and gummy
and some
bears.
Gummy bears. That's
wait,
right.
What? Oh.
Because that's apparently how you feed yourself.
Ryan
when
Mickens.
Your wife's out of town.
Ryan Mickens.
I wasn't gonna say a name.
That's a Ryan Mickens dinner, if I've ever heard one. Oh, guys. We're wrapping up the mini series about Peter.
Yep.
And Maren, you're here because you gave the message. Follow me week four,
three.
Week three.
Wait.
Part two, week three.
Week three.
which would have been week six.
Of the Peter mini series. That's all I know.
Lord, I don't want to say anything stupid.
Help me, Jesus.
Maren, what was the big idea of your message this past weekend?
Ultimately, the big idea is that Jesus has the power to transform your life. I wanted us to sit in the story of the Transfiguration to see Jesus's transformation from human-looking being into radiant light, which really wasn't Jesus being changed so much as it was Jesus revealing to his disciples who he really is. And so I think that the changing part really happened with those three disciples that ascended the mountain and witnessed the Transfiguration. So we don't use that word very often anymore, but I wanted to drive home the point that especially what we see described in 2 Peter chapter 1, we are kind of there on the mountain ourselves, beholding his glory. We're given the opportunity to behold his glory and to be changed more into his likeness, thus kind of having a transfiguration of our own. Jesus has the power to transform your life. So
yeah,
that was the short of it.
When you preach, do you preach with like your friends' faces in mind?
I do.
This message is for so-and-so. I know it's for everybody. But this message is for specifically so-and-so, and I'm going to make sure that they're there.
I don't start there, but I'd be lying if I said I didn't think of probably every time I've ever written a message, I think of a handful of people,
yeah.
And I wonder, all right, well, what are they going to hear? What are they going to get out of this? It's never like, ooh, I hope they hear this, you know?
Yeah. Look in their direction the
exactly.
whole time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But no, there's usually different, it's not always the same people. Different
yeah,
groups
right,
of people,
right, right.
different individuals will come to my mind when I'm writing.
Yeah, because I've had a few experiences with you in the past couple of weeks, and I'm like, oh, she wrote this for that person.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, that you're going to say she wrote this for me.
She's telling me I need to have a mountaintop
tremble
experience.
Tremble before him.
Yeah, that was just curious about that. But Matthew 17, right? That's where you focused your sermon.
Yep. With a little bit from Mark and a little bit from Luke, because they help round out the story.
Yeah. So Jesus brings like the A-team up to the mountain, except it's not the A-team.
He brings his closest disciples.
He brings Rocky and the Sons of Thunder.
Yeah, but they're like his best friends. I don't know. You said you had a theory on why he chose them and not everybody else. And I was like I try to do. I put myself in the position of the people that we're talking about. And so I'm putting myself in the position of like Andrew. And I'm watching these guys go up the mountain with Jesus. And I'm like, man, what else do I have to do? I'm like the most humble, selfless person ever. But you're choosing knucklehead guys to go up the mountain.
Because literally everything is a competition to you. We say this week after week after week when it comes to you. I don't know. I thought about that too. And depending on what they were tending to at the bottom of the mountain, like, I don't know that I would have been jealous or upset that I wasn't chosen to go on this like arduous climb. This was a high point. This wasn't just a hill. And so I might have been like, oof, thanks. I'm going to sit this one out.
Yeah, that's true. The only time I ever hiked up a mountain, I was wearing Chacos.
Which has also been mentioned on this podcast. Like early on. It was like episode four.
It was a while ago.
This is what I think. So we see that Jesus often went alone into the wilderness to pray. We see at least one example where he brought his disciples to the Garden of Gethsemane to pray with him. Mm-hmm. And they were all falling asleep the whole time. Yeah. They were exhausted. If I had to put, and again, assuming that these disciples are likely like teenage boys, I put all that in my mind and I think, I bet that they would probably think, oh, he's going to go up on that mountain and pray all night. I don't want to go.
They wanted to go.
I bet they were like, oh, man, I can finally get some sleep.
Goodness.
Yeah.
That makes a little more sense. And it also tracks with, like, God picks people with more, like, passion than wisdom to do cool stuff.
Or, again, if my theory is onto anything, maybe it's because they were the ones that needed the adjustment.
Yeah.
I don't really know if Andrew was scolded for seeing things only from a human perspective, or if that was strictly a Peter problem or a Sons of Thunder problem or whatever. Maybe the others didn't need the lesson. I don't know.
Yeah. It still seems like a cool thing you would have missed out on, though. The top of the mountain. You mentioned in your sermon that you would tease out some of the similarities between Moses and his story going up on the mountain and this one. So what did you wish you had time to share in your sermon that you want to talk about here?
Yeah, I feel like if I were teaching an ongoing class about the book of Matthew or something, and we could have camped out on this story for quite some time. I mean, for goodness sakes, it's the transfiguration in 30 minutes. There's so much imagery. Moses goes up to a mountain, but he goes alone. He doesn't bring his friends. Obviously, Jesus goes up to a mountain. Moses has an encounter with God's glory, God's brilliance in the form of a burning bush. Jesus is God's glory.
Yeah.
The cloud descends on the mountain. Both in Exodus and, or the cloud in Exodus leads the Israelites through the wilderness after they've been set free from Egypt. The cloud of glory appears here at the top of the mountain. As I did mention in the message, Moses takes on the glow of what he sees.
Yeah.
But Jesus is the glow. I thought of it like, I didn't use this illustration, but like, did you guys ever have like glow sticks growing up?
Oh, yeah. We got glow sticks all over our house at all times.
Yeah. Well, if you hold the glow stick like up to a light bulb, it will glow for like a couple of minutes,
right?
You know, after it's been exposed to that great, great light, but then the glow stick will ultimately fade.
Mm-hmm.
That was the case with Moses. Moses was the glow stick, right? Mm-hmm. Jesus is the light bulb,
right?
But Moses was the glow stick exposed to the light and came down the mountain still glowing for a period of time and freaked the people out and had to wear a veil. So anyway, I'm sure there's a lot more to the 6 days travel, I think, to the mountain is also a callback to the book of Exodus. There's some biblical numerology there that's a callback to the book of Exodus.
And if you step really far back, both Matthew and John really lean into the narrative of Jesus as like leading a new Exodus. So it's all throughout. It's the miracle of the bread tied in with the miracle of manna from heaven. It's like Jesus walking on water and the way being parted so the Israelites could walk through on dry land. There's so many different echoes of that story because that's one of the biggest motifs that the early apostles used to describe what it is that Jesus accomplished. He led a new exodus out of the slavery that we were in to sin and to death.
And Moses was given the law on the mountain, and Jesus came to fulfill the law.
And he gave his sermon on the mount on a mountain. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The new covenant in Christ Jesus, all that stuff.
Yeah. Mm. The testing of Jesus in the wilderness, the testing of the Israelites in the wilderness. Mm-hmm. It's over and over again. So
Which is why we keep calling Matthew a story of confirmation.
Fulfillment. Yeah.
Fulfillment. That's it. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that made me it made me start thinking about, like, even what we're about to see in Jesus' story. Like, he comes down the mountain. Well, first of all, he comes down to the mountain, and it's, like, chaos, right? Which also, didn't that also happen to Moses? He came down the mountain, and there's, like, a golden calf?
Oh, yeah. The first time he came down the mountain with the original tablets before he, in a fit of rage, threw them to the ground and broke them.
Yeah. But I was thinking about, like, the similarities or differences just with, like, the Jesus, what the disciples are about to witness with Jesus going through the process of dying on the cross. And like, everything's light in this story. Everything, God says, this is my son who I love. They're fallen on their faces. Like there's like the inverse of that with the story on the cross where like, I guess was the cross that was on a hill. That wasn't really a mountain.
It was on a hill.
But, yeah, it's like darkness, like the cloud that like this Jesus becomes complete light. But at his crucifixion, it's like
darkness comes over
complete
land.
Darkness.
Yeah.
And it was just like cool for me to think through like, man, both of those things are true in the God that we believe in. It's like complete light and suffered.
Right.
You know? Right. Yeah.
Anyways. Yeah, I mean that's the opening to John's gospel. That's what he says. The light came into the world. Yeah. His life gave light to everyone, but the light came into the world, but we did not recognize the light. And so that's the story of Jesus up to the crucifixion in a nutshell. The light came into the world, but we didn't recognize the light.
I think I might have put that in the fun facts.
Oh yeah,
it was so long ago. Who could know? But. You know, the story of the transfiguration is mentioned in the synoptics in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, but an argument has been made that it's also mentioned in John because of that opening passage in John. Anyway, it's interesting to reread the first chapter of John in light of this story of the transfiguration.
Do you think Jesus did this for the disciples, or do you think... Because anytime I've ever read this, I'm like, oh, he had an unfinished business with like Elijah and Moses. Like, I don't know what they talked about, but they talked about the Exodus or whatever. But I'm like, oh, he's got to go up there anyways to like talk to them. Mm-hmm. So he's going to bring these guys along for the ride. Or do you think he did this experience for Peter and the other guys?
Well, oh, go ahead.
Well, if we're talking about things in sequence, and I believe in Mark and Luke, the transfiguration happens in the same order as what we see in Matthew. The walking on the water story, the get behind me, Satan story, the you're the rock and on you I'll build my church. Like there's a sequence of events.
Yeah.
And so I think in light of that sequence of events, it would make sense that Peter's having these ups and downs. Jesus is starting to try to prepare his disciples that he's going to go to Jerusalem and be killed. And this seems to be this moment of confirmation for Peter and the Sons of Thunder. Mm. Like I am who I say I am. Mm. In the story of Jesus walking on water, he identifies himself as the I am. The I am is here. And then he asks his disciples, who do you say I am?
Yeah.
And then this core group of disciples gets to ascend the mountain and hear who God says he is. Yeah. And so I think it's just this confirmation event, this confirmation act to, I think it is for the disciples. I said this kind of at the end of the message. I wish we knew more of what Moses and Elijah were saying to Jesus.
Yeah.
Did he need to be encouraged on his way to the cross? Mm-hmm. Was it, I guess, what percentage of this was for Jesus to encourage his heart? And what percentage of this was to give confirmation to the disciples who would soon be scattered in the chaotic events of the cross?
What do you think about that? Because you asked that question in your sermon, did Jesus need to be encouraged? And my initial reaction was like, no, he's Jesus. But I think he did.
I think he did. I think the Jesus I see in Gethsemane needed to be encouraged.
Mm. Yeah, because that the angel comes down and strengthens him. Mm-hmm. Isn't that what it says?
Oh, yeah, and he's weeping and he's asking God to take this cup from him. Like, I think he the human side of Jesus needed encouragement, absolutely.
So, like, this could be an event where God is basically, like, he knows who his son is. The same with Gethsemane. It's like, this is a way God is caring for the reality and the human vulnerability that is his son.
I think, and I'm also, this is a new thought, I'm just kind of formulating it right now, but thinking through sequence and thinking through his command, don't tell anybody about this until after the Son of Man has been raised from the dead. It's clear that Jesus wanted them to tell people about this after the Son of Man was raised from the dead. Like, that's the reason they came, was to be witnesses to this. Yeah. And as I think about it and think about church history and all of the, I mean, after the resurrection and the ascension of Jesus, then the hard work began of, okay, what the heck just happened to us? The Son of God was here, but he died, but he's alive again. And what? And now we all have the Holy Spirit to guide us into all truth. It's like,
Peter's like, I know. I saw something. Like, well, I saw it. But so
the next 300 years were spending so much time debating the nature of Christ. And is he man? Is he God? Is he both? How? All of that. And I wonder if this happening before the crucifixion and resurrection is 100% on purpose so that the apostles would know, no, this wasn't just Jesus got resurrected and turned into an angel. He was always the radiant Son of God. Like, he was always glorious before he died. And I wonder if it was God helping the apostles out with a little bit of good theology before the resurrection and before the crucifixion.
And not just any apostle, but the one upon which he would build his church.
Yes. He wants Peter and the Sons of Thunder to understand who he really is, even though knowing full well they won't understand it until later.
Right.
I don't know. I'm just thinking that's interesting.
That's good, because I was one of my questions was they'd already seen a bunch of miracles.
Right.
So, like, why did they need this, like, terrifying experience on top of all the stuff they've already seen?
Because, and I'm shooting from the hip here, but because other people worked miracles. Moses worked miracles. Mm. Elijah worked miracles. But they weren't the Son of God. They weren't God himself in the flesh.
Yes.
And so there is something about...
So they needed to see it.
Yeah.
And hear.
And hearing.
This is my son. Yeah. Again, Peter, the first apostle, or whatever, the pope, the Catholic Church would consider Peter the pope, right? The first pope. The foundation upon which the church is built. James, the first martyr. John, the revelator. Like, when you think about the roles that these three individuals played in early church history and establishing the church, maybe that's an indication as to why these three were with him and saw this cosmic event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so then we get to Peter, and you said that this is a "can I touch the hands" moment. So first, before we do that, we have to talk about the "can I touch the hands" moment. Do you know how many people came up to me after service and were like, "She didn't even say who the guy was.
She put that in the app notes on purpose. She didn't say who he was."
So I was like, "Oh yeah, that's Vernon Reed.
That's all right. That's my guy."
Did you know that?
I did not know that.
How did you know?
I saw her notes.
Oh.
So I was like, yeah, let me look it up.
I almost didn't even like include the name in the whatever notes.
Why didn't you say it?
Because there comes a point in my process where I'm delirious.
Who's Vernon Reed?
Out of nowhere. Thank you, Tyler. There comes a point in my writing process where I'm just about to do this, and I wonder if I'm just screaming into the void. Is anybody out there? Is there anyone listening?
Yeah.
And a lot of that has to do with like the fun facts being like an additional thing that we do it every week.
Yeah.
And so for my own entertainment, I thought, I'm not even going to tell them who this is, because if they don't know by now, that's on them.
Well, no one's going to know who that
is. But somebody is out there who will know who this is, hands down.
Sure.
And so I put in the app notes, if you know, you should come talk to me because we should be friends.
Yes.
And that absolutely did happen.
Yeah. Well, I did something similar. I mean, it's for our own edification. I did something similar with the whole Eastern Orthodox hand gesture thing.
Oh, yeah.
Where I said, hey, this is, if you want to know, come talk to me. And it's been fun. A lot of people have actually wanted to know. It's my way of saying, hey, who are the nerds? Come talk to me.
Yes. I got a text this morning from somebody who I'm already friends with, but who said, hey, great sermon. According to your app notes, we're supposed to be friends.
Hey, nice.
Right? Somebody who knows.
What song would you recommend for someone to be introduced to Vernon Reed?
So here's the thing. You've already heard their most popular song. If you've ever watched any football game ever, you've already heard a clip of Cult of Personality. That's their biggest song. And the guitar solo, that song in particular. What are we doing? You're not playing a cover of Florida. Turn it off.
on the
Turn
list.
Turn it off. Oh, my goodness gracious. You've already heard Cult of Personality, I promise. If you live in America, if you're breathing the same air I'm breathing, you've already heard it somewhere, somehow. Open Letter to a Landlord. I can't listen to that song without crying. Can't do it because I lived it. So gotta go listen to that song.
Okay. Oh, he's in a band.
That's right. A band.
Oh, I just looked up him.
Bless you.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
You think this is on football?
Right there, you've heard it. Enjoy. Yeah, this is our hero.
Can I touch the hands? That's great.
All right, so yeah, you gotta give us a little bit more detail with
guitar
that story.
Guitar hero, yeah.
So you were not in town to see his concert.
I was living in Chicago at the time, so I was in town because I lived there. But so that song that you just played came out, I want to say, in like 89 or something. So I was a kid when that song like first rose to popularity, and at the time there were not a lot of African Americans doing just rock like that, especially getting any kind of radio play. So I was a fan of other bands that weren't getting radio play, rock and roll bands that were fronted by African Americans, but they were kind of the breakthrough artist.
What's the band name?
Living Color.
Living Color. Thank you.
Yeah. They were the breakthrough artist. And as a kid, especially watching that guitar player, watching Vernon Reid, I was just like a starry-eyed kid. My goodness, he could play. So I had to wait many, many years for them to kind of regroup as a band. I think they took some time off. They played the Park West Theater in Chicago, and I took my friend Heather, and the rest is history.
Okay, so you saw him knowing. It wasn't like you were at a bagel shop.
No.
He was there ordering.
I said,
like,
ahead
I touch
of the show.
The hands?
Yeah. So we're like walking up because, I don't know, when doors open, but we're walking up to the venue, and he must have been, I don't know, going to grab a coffee or something because he's just coming down the sidewalk in broad daylight. And I knew who he was.
It makes it a little bit better.
And she didn't know who he was.
Like, he knows that you're there to see him. Even though you said the weirdest thing you could possibly say.
I cannot be held.
It's not like you're at Giordano's and you see him walk by and you ask him if you can touch
his
hands.
Like collect his hair or something. Yeah.
No. Like, as I said, I was walking up to the venue and he was just about to pass me and
so
lost my mind.
What were your thoughts right after that?
Were you even able to enjoy the concert? Yeah, or were you so mortified?
Did you go home?
So it was a good thing that my friend was there because she helped me laugh off the entire mortifying event. And he was so nice. Like I said, there was some nervous laughter on his part, you know. But as I zombie walked toward him, he actually said, he held out his hands and said, stop.
Oh, okay.
So you got it.
We had a little moment. Yeah. And I didn't show this picture during the sermon because it's tragically blurry, but I did get my picture.
You got your picture taken.
At the end of the show.
No hands in the picture, though.
I got my picture at the end of the show.
So he was willing to talk to you again.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay,
we had a laugh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Me and
Vernon like, can you believe
Reed,
what I said to you?
Guitar hero.
Barry, do you have any moments like that? Can I touch the hands moments?
It didn't turn out super awkward, but it was still kind of weird. When I was living homeless in New York City, this was when I was doing World Next Door, and I lived 4 days homeless. And so I was looking pretty grody and smelling pretty bad by the end of those 4 days, no shower or anything. And I took the Staten Island Ferry just for kicks because I just had to kill time. I get on the Staten Island Ferry, and who is there but Anthony Bourdain getting ready to shoot something.
What?
And I saw him there. He was just standing around with his crew getting ready. And I was like, all right. So I went up to him. My hair
goodness.
Was all like weird. I was wearing this old gross hoodie that was like stained. And
how
I was just
I
like,
I've never heard this before.
And I just said, I said, my dad's even bigger fan. And I was like, my dad would kill me if I didn't say hi to you. We love your work. You're amazing. And so.
Was he nice?
He was nice. He was like, thank you. And then another guy was like, okay, we got to get. And I was like, all right,
bye.
So anyway, it wasn't, thankfully I didn't embarrass myself. I just was not like, it didn't smell good. Or
I don't have like a moment
good.
With like a celebrity. The only time I've really ever like had an encounter with celebrity, it was Coyote Peterson.
I don't even know
who that
is.
He's like a.
Sports.
He's a kids a like jungle guy.
A kid's jungle guy.
Well, like he's on Discovery Channel. Oh. Like he like gets stung by bees on purpose or like gets bit by a snake or something. But okay. He was in the Florida Keys when we were down there. But it wasn't weird. The weirdest, the thing that I thought.
That's the kind of guy you're like, I don't want to touch your hands.
Yeah.
I don't know what you've been touching. Slime. And
the weirdest, the thing that I could compare to your story. Had nothing to do with celebrities, but I was like emceeing an event. And it was the time where we were like giving out awards for this company. And I was like, yeah, we're just so thankful for so-and-so winning this award. We love you. Come on up here. Come on up here to get your award. We love you. Yeah. Come on up here and let me put my love on you. And as soon as I said it, I was like, I just got like I felt like I was like, clear, like everybody saw right through. I felt like I just stopped talking.
Oh my goodness! Yeah,
like, I was supposed to keep talking for the rest of the night.
Nope.
I feel like I was just like,
and that's it, guys. Have a great night.
Please come up and talk because I don't know
what you move on after that.
Come on up here. Let me put my love on you.
There's no coming back after that. Yeah, I heard a lot of stories like that. Like it wasn't all about people. Either came up to me with their celebrity encounter. One person told me they met Mr. T on the streets of Chicago.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. But other people came up to me with their kind of more mortifying stories. I was at our Latino lunch yesterday, Comida en Familia, and someone was relating to that feeling. I said just exactly the wrong thing.
Yeah.
They said that they were at a funeral and standing kind of in the receiving line to greet the bereaved and to give their condolences. And they were so, so, so nervous and worried about what they would say to the bereaved, to the grieving, that they reached the person and said, congratulations.
Oh no.
Oh, no.
That was pretty good.
that's a good one. Yeah.
That was
pretty good. That was pretty good.
That's way worse than can I touch the hands.
Congratulations. I was a musician at one point in my life, but I would go play concerts at places, and I have more stories related to dumb things said from the stage. Like
that's the worst.
I got the wrong state. Like we were on some like tour up and down the East Coast or something like that, and I didn't even know where we were, and I was like, thank you,
Cleveland,
South Carolina, when we were in like Virginia or something like that. Like I've done dumb things before. And as far as celebrity, I lived in Chicago, so I saw
everybody was a celebrity.
Yeah, I saw Kevin Costner in a store once. Like
how's he doing?
Wasn't my first brush with celebrity. It's just who the person was. It's who Vernon Reid was and what he had meant to my life growing up.
Yeah. Man, you just choked on that.
Do you remember? Do you remember my last sermon before I left for sabbatical? And I was trying to. Something in the passage said something about like a trumpet blast or something like that. And I was like, maybe it won't be a trumpet blast for you. Maybe it'll just be something small. Maybe just a little toot of life.
Yes.
And then I left for 3 months.
And then toot. I left.
A little toot of life. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Keep those stories coming, dear listener.
They're good.
Because I love them.
So Peter starts talking. Why was that the thing he chose to talk about? He's like, hey, this is great. Let's build some tents.
I've got an idea.
What?
Yeah, you know, want to know what we could do? We could build some stuff. So that's debated. I was really trying to kind of zero in on that. What's the deal with these shelters or tents as they're translated? And it's either because they were on the top of the mountain and it was sunny and they needed some shade or whatever. It could be as simple as that.
It's like, it's really bright out here. We got to get some shade.
It could be as simple as that. Maybe Peter thought they were going to spend some time up there and that they would need a place of shelter. Could be as simple as that. Or it could be tied to the Festival of Tabernacles or the Feast of Tabernacles.
Is that Sukkot?
Yes.
Yeah.
That is Sukkot. Tabernacles. Is it? There's another name it goes by.
Feast of Booths.
Yeah, I think it is Booths. Yeah.
Feast of Booths?
Yeah, and I put in the fun fact.
I don't know.
I put in the app notes that this is still celebrated today.
Mm-hmm. The Feast of Booths?
Yeah, Sukkot. It just happened in October. And so it is in remembrance of, I believe, being in the wilderness and God providing for them in the wilderness and needing to build little shelters for themselves. Mm. And so the holiday, the celebration is you build a little shelter outside and you eat your meals outside. Mm-hmm. And it's like a, you know, it's obviously morphed throughout the years and down through the centuries to where now it's like a Pinterest thing. And like the cuter you can make your little booth, like for real, there's tapestries hanging from the walls of the makeshift booth that you build. It's the same.
Characterized by festive meals in a sukkah.
Yeah.
A temporary wood covered hut.
Yes.
And the taking of the four species.
So there's certain foods that you eat or not even eat. There's foods that are part of the ceremony, part of the holiday that is Sukkot.
It's a harvest festival.
Yeah.
So I think I read somewhere. It's probably in Wikipedia. I didn't read it, but I vaguely remember someone saying that it could have also had ties to when you were harvesting. You had to spend so many days harvesting by hand everything that you'd actually stay out in your fields in these tents. Like temporary, you didn't go back home, you just stayed out and kept. So anyway, it could have some tie there as well.
It's a celebration of God's provision, essentially.
Yes.
So he wants to do that. He wants to build
that. Could be what he was referencing.
Okay.
Yes. I don't know.
I wish the I don't know if I should say that. I wish Matthew would have been like, yeah, they were super, they like lost their minds for a minute. And then he said we should build, but it was like this incredible experience and Peter's first response, like there's no like immediate reaction to like, what are we looking at? It was just kind of like, I see what's going on here. We got to build some tents, but it was no like emotional reaction to what they were seeing.
Well, Mark gives us that bit of information, in his account that the only reason Peter said it is because he didn't really know what else to say. Yeah. So I don't know that there was. It's can I touch the hands?
But like
was
he happy? Like was he free? Like super excited?
Well, and one of the reasons I said it was his can I touch the hands moment is because this is Moses and Elijah, for goodness sakes.
Right.
Star struck.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the two of the greatest heroes of their faith up to that point just appear in human form? Yeah. Out of nowhere. Totally starstruck.
And you think, I don't know. I mean, they didn't have pictures back then. How do they know what they looked like?
That's another question. We don't know how they were. Did they identify themselves? Mm-hmm. We don't
did
know
Jesus
how
explain
they were
it later?
Recognized. Yeah. We don't know. That part we don't know.
The other thing I just thought of, and I didn't write this sermon, so I probably could have brushed up on some of this stuff. But the word for dwelling or tent is the same word used for tabernacle. So that's another tie-in with the Old Testament where God's presence, and again, that's where Moses' face is all glowy and stuff. So maybe Peter has some moment where he's thinking, we got to build a new tabernacle because God is dwelling among us now.
Yeah.
Maybe this will be where we build a new temple someday or something. I mean, who knows what's going through his mind? And then maybe he's like, oh, but wait, there's Moses and Elijah here too. They probably want their own tabernacles. Let's build three tabernacles. I don't know. So yeah, we'll never know probably, but
I think he was just stammering because he was starstruck.
Yeah. Hmm.
And so he's talking in the middle of him talking, God basically like interrupts him.
Yes.
Yeah. Which I find that to be funny, but why do you think he, in the middle of his great idea of building tents, God's literal voice was like, hey, this is my son. Listen to him.
Yeah.
Why do you think God chose to like interrupt him?
It could have been because he was talking during this cosmic event, this beautiful, awe-inspiring event. And the only appropriate response was veneration. The only appropriate response would have been awe and worship and bowing and reverence.
Yeah.
And Peter is just talking.
So you think he was like reprimanding him. Like, hey, stop.
The only
listen
reason
to him.
I think that may be the case is because of the indication that even as he spoke, But even as he spoke, right. Scripture says. But <it's>, even as he spoke.
I didn't notice till just now, verse 3, Moses and Elijah appeared and began talking with Jesus. Peter exclaimed. Like Moses yes. is like, Jesus, yes. you are about to go through a significant trial, and we are here
I know.
To encourage you. We guys, can I can make 3. Yeah. 10. And finally, God's just like, enough. This is my dearly loved son.
Listen to him. Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, that's so funny. Oh, Peter. Yeah. Bless his little old heart.
I see myself in it, though.
Oh, I do, too. I see you in it.
I've seen it all 3 weeks. We've talked about this. Like, this is just one more example of Peter being like, I got to control something. I got to control something. And
I'll fix this.
I know what I could do. I could make a tent or whatever. Like, I do that. I'm like, I like yeah. plans. Yeah. I like knowing what to expect. And
sorry, I just now I'm thinking that Peter is trying to get Moses and Elijah to notice that he's there.
Yes, there could be an
They're
element
focused
of that.
On Jesus, and he's like, "Hey, I'm Peter. I thought
I
maybe
things.
We could build some tents, or yeah. I don't know. Anyway, I'm just kind of the ideas guy around here, and
yeah. But I think I see Peter being like, "What can I control? And I do that, and I God's not asking him to control anything. He's asking him to actually shut his mouth and like start listening or listen to his son. Something listening does is putting Jesus at the center instead of your plan, instead of the thing you want to accomplish or the thing you want to do. And I see myself a lot in that. And oh, actually, because then Moses and Elijah go away. And then it's just Jesus, right? So like
they are all terrified, face down on the ground, all three of the disciples, and then Jesus walks over and touches them, and presumably they open their eyes and it's just they're up on a hillside and it's just Jesus.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, but for somebody who like loves plans, loves like thinking in the future and like I mean, I'm going away this week to like think about 3-year projects, essentially. Like ministry opportunities and ministry offerings and discipleship things and whatever. Like I like doing that. But I think God, when he's like, hey, stop building tents and just listen like that, that's the challenge that I see Peter in, myself.
Yeah. Mm. That's the invitation for sure.
Yeah. You said, be with God and let him transform you.
Yes.
That's like part of it too. Like,
yeah.
Listen to him and be with him.
Yeah. That word for transfigure, that word metamorpho means to be changed, but specifically to be changed, from being with, because of being with. Yeah. I wonder about the listen to him thing in the sequence of events, right? So Peter just gets rebuked, get behind me, Satan, because Jesus is talking about going to Jerusalem where he will suffer and be killed. And Peter won't listen to him. Mm-hmm. No, Lord, this will never happen to you.
Oh, yeah.
And so then Luke tells us what they were talking about. They were talking about Jesus's trip to Jerusalem and his impending exodus. And I wonder if Peter just wasn't wanting to hear it again. Mm. No, Lord, we're not talking about you dying, right? Mm. And he just interrupts. I'm using my imagination here.
Sure.
But why would God say, listen to him? Mm. He's tried to tell you this multiple times now, and you have not listened to him. Now he's talking about it with Moses and Elijah. Yeah. Listen to him.
Actually, it's interesting. It's almost like Peter keeps saying, oh, I get it. I'm going to walk on water. Wait, the water. And then he's like, oh, I get it. You're the you know, the son of the living God. And then it's get behind me, Satan. And he's like, I get it. Let's build some tabernacles for you guys. And then it's like he keeps thinking he's got it. He keeps thinking, oh, I figured it out.
Yeah.
I finally got it. And then he's proven wrong again and again until finally he denies Christ at his own crucifixion. Like, at that point, it's like, oh, I don't get it. And I can't remember which gospel tells us that he goes away and weeps bitterly after that. Mm-hmm. But, like, of course he does. Like, he genuinely didn't. He didn't get it. And he was one of the ones that walked away from Jesus at the end. So.
And I skipped over that part
to
get to who he did become. Because we're not done with the Matthew series. And we're definitely not done with Peter.
Right.
But I wanted us to see how this event directly informed how he relayed the gospel in 2 Peter.
Yeah.
We saw this with our own eyes. We're not making up clever stories. We beheld his glory when the cloud came and the voice was heard. And he said, this is my dearly loved son, whom I am well pleased.
It is Matthew, where it says, and he went away weeping bitterly, just for what it's worth.
I just thought about like going back to the Christ Above All series we did in October and thinking about this story here and what you just said about, like, I get it. Like, I think I do that. I think I'll speak for everyone. I think we all kind of do that where it's like, oh, I get it. Jesus is this for me or what? Like, Jesus is my life coach or whatever. Like, Jesus is the mascot to my tribe or whatever. Like, I get it. Jesus is this, and you like kind of frame Jesus into how you want to view Jesus.
I get it. Here's the box that Jesus fits in.
And God's like, no, it's my son. I love him. Right. And you need to listen to him.
Right.
Yeah. Because I think we all do that too.
Mm. Yeah.
So on the way down the mountain, the dudes have questions. These are not the questions I would have been asking, but these are, they do have questions. They're basically asking about Old Testament prophecy.
Yeah.
when they're asking about Elijah, they're hearing Jesus talk about it, and they realize that Jesus is talking about John the Baptist.
Yeah,
what does that mean? Is John the Baptist Elijah?
He is a figure of Elijah. He's not Elijah himself, but a representation of what Malachi was talking about. That's why Jesus explained it that way. Yes, Elijah did come, but he wasn't recognized, he wasn't received, and they made him suffer like they're about to make me suffer. Because that's another thing. Like, that's another thing I dove deep into with the commentaries. Like, all right, was he some kind of reincarnation of Elijah himself? But no, because Elijah's there on the mountain as Elijah, and John the Baptist, we know his origins. We know who his parents were, and that whole story of Elizabeth being pregnant with John and John leaping in the womb when Mary was pregnant with Jesus. Like, we have John the Baptist's origin story, but John the Baptist was that prophetic voice fulfilling what Malachi said would happen.
Like preparing the way and all that stuff,
Just before we move on too far, I don't know if you've read this anywhere. I don't even know if this is anything, but there are some schools of thought that say that when you read in the Old Testament, the angel of the Lord, it's often referred to as, it's kind of a blurry distinction between whether the angel of the Lord is God or is a messenger from God. And there are some scholars that would say, actually, it's like a human incarnation of God's presence. It's Christ before Jesus is born in the Old Testament.
Oh, wow.
And I just checked to make sure, but both Moses and Elijah encounter the angel of the Lord in their stories in the Old Testament. So I wonder, I wonder if Jesus really was the angel of the Lord in the Old Testament, and they knew him, and that's why they already had a relationship. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah,
that has nothing to do with anything. I just thought that was interesting. Sorry. Anyway, what was the question?
I thought that was an interesting connection to 2 Peter 1. When, again, Peter is saying, we saw this, we were there, we witnessed, we were there with him on the holy mountain. And because of that experience, we have greater confidence in the message proclaimed by the prophets. Hmm. Why is he talking about the prophets here in 2 Peter? Hmm. And why was the prophet Malachi the first thing that came to their minds as they were coming down the mountain? They needed to connect the dots. And I reframed that as they needed to be able to see things from God's perspective.
Right.
Peter had been reprimanded for merely seeing things through his own human point of view. Something in him needed to get corrected. And it seems in 2 Peter that something in him did get corrected. And I think it started with that question, that trip down the mountain. Okay, Lord, help us understand Malachi. Help us understand the message of your prophet. Help us understand the message of God. Help us to see this from God's point of view.
Seeing things from God's point of view, like, that makes, when Jesus dies on the cross and he's like, I don't know, like, it makes the cross even more gut-wrenching if you're trying to see it from God's point of view and you're like, God says who Jesus is.
My dearly loved son.
And Jesus says, why have you forsaken me?
Yeah.
Like that shit, that, I don't know, that makes it even more gut-wrenching as we hear Jesus cry out in agony, the dearly beloved son that people need to listen to, and he's like, God, why have you forsaken me? It's like, it's another example of how God's delight and in the cross's example, God's delight and God's silence can be part of the same story. Mm.
That is the prophetic voice of Jesus. It's a call back to Psalm 22, verse 1. My God, why have you abandoned me? Mm. Why are you so far away when I groan for help? Every day I call to you, but you do not answer. Every night I lift my voice, but I find no relief.
Yeah.
It's like the deepest lament. Hmm. Why have you abandoned me? Yeah. For the writer to include that in the story, that call back to Psalm 22, mm-hmm. even that shows some clarity in the message of the prophets. Oh, and then when he said this, that's what Psalm 22 was pointing toward. That's, okay, story of fulfillment. Jesus was fulfilling even that prophecy, that lament. Mm-hmm. It kind of all culminated in the person of Jesus.
Yeah. I like this little mini series about Peter. I like the chronology mm-hmm. of what we've talked about the past couple weeks of mm-hmm. like, man, just Peter, just he's getting known for like his worst moments.
and his best. This is one best moment.
Yeah.
Which one?
On this rock, I'll build my church.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's immediately followed up
by the Messiah. I know.
If that came second, that would have been better, but it got immediately followed by him getting called Satan. So just the past couple weeks, we talked about how the chapter right before this, Peter tells Jesus that he believes he's the Messiah, Son of God. Jesus tells them that he's going to die, take up your cross. To me, this story, the Transfiguration, is like, after all that, Peter, this is who you're following. Mm-hmm. All that. You saw him on the water. You heard him say, you got to pick up your cross and die, or pick up a cross and follow me. after all that, and what's yet to come, this light is the thing that you're following. This is who you're going to be following. So, he's not like a special rabbi that God's using. This is it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Even like the juxtaposition of who do you say that I am or who do people say that I am, that the Son of Man is. Well, some say you're the prophet Elijah. Well, in sequence, now here's Jesus standing with the prophet Elijah. He's clearly not the prophet Elijah. Yeah. He's clearly greater than the prophet Elijah. This is all just pointing toward the divinity of Christ and his true nature.
And that's the guy that's going to be killed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no one takes my life from me. I lay it down.
Yeah.
This is the guy who's going to lay his glory down and allow the evil to win so that he can have the ultimate victory and rescue us from bondage in the new Exodus. Mm.
Yeah, and then, like I said, they come down off the mountain, and there's a boy who's demon-possessed. And is Jesus mad at these people after that? Like, we didn't preach on this, but I was reading it today.
Mm-hmm. Are we touching on that story at all?
No, we're not. Not in this series.
So he comes off the mountain. I don't know. We don't need to talk about this, I guess. But, like, it says, at the foot of the mountain, a large crowd was waiting for them. A man came and knelt before Jesus and said, Lord, have mercy on my son. He has seizures and suffers terribly. He often falls into the fire and into the water. So I brought him to your disciples, but they couldn't heal him. And Jesus said, you faithless and corrupt people, how long must I be with you? How long must I put up with you? Bring the boy here to me.
Yeah.
I don't know. Did the mountain stress him out? Like, that's a pretty intense decline from the mountain.
It is. Yeah. At the foot of the mountain.
Yeah, everybody's
there. A large crowd waiting.
So the other disciples were trying to cast out the demon and they couldn't do it because they didn't have enough faith.
Andrew, that's why you couldn't go up there.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that story just, again, shows the humanness of Jesus.
Yeah.
He's on his way to Jerusalem. Like, this begins the descent, literally and figuratively. He's descending into the darkest period, you know, of his human existence. And who wouldn't be stressed out by that?
Oh,
and by
yeah,
the time
I
we
would
get to Gethsemane, he's crying out to God.
Yeah. I don't like doing things with people 2 days in a row, much less all the time.
The story with the kid with the demon, I think if I had to just guess from what I'm reading here, I think what Matthew's trying to get across is that at this point, it's like casting out demons. Like, guys, this is like basic stuff. Mm-hmm. You've been doing this for a while. You did it before.
So
because
he's mad
at
the disciples.
I think what he says, and I was just trying to look it up. I think he's saying, you faithless and corrupt generation. But let me make sure. Because I think he's referring to, you faithless and perverse generation. How much longer must I be with you? How much longer must I put up with you? Basically, he's talking to the state of things, a world that is so under the thumb of evil that demons can possess little boys, and y'all don't have enough faith to cast them out in my authority. I've trained you in this. I've taught you in this to his disciples, and he's just like, look, guys. And then he says, you little faiths, like he calls them little faiths, you people of little faith. You know, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can make a mountain move. So he's trying to correct them. He's like, you guys still don't know who I am. Because if you knew who I was, you could, in my authority, you could cast out a demon with a word. But you don't have enough faith. You still don't believe. I think that's the subtext in conjunction with the transfiguration. I don't think he's being a jerk, personally. I think he's being exasperated at how long it's taking his disciples to get it through their thick skulls.
Yeah.
What's really going on here?
And I think the love of a father for a boy who's being tormented.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Guys.
Set the kid free already.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Yeah.
I'd be at the bottom of the mountain too.
Yeah.
Where do we go next, Barry?
So, as we just mentioned, there's plenty of stuff that we're not going to cover in this series. There's just too much of Matthew, not enough pulpit time. So we had to be brutal in choosing which passages. And so I'm going to be choosing kind of a relatively small passage that I think is also one of the most significant in this section of the book, where Jesus talks about who is greatest in the kingdom. Because his disciples are asking, and they want to know, is it me? Like, am I the greatest in the kingdom? Am I going to be the best? That's a theme throughout the book. And Jesus gives a rather surprising response. So that's all I'll say. That's what we'll talk about on Sunday.
Cool. All right. Maren, thanks for the great sermon.
Sure thing.
Yeah, we'll see you in January. will you... Hang on, I gotta tee myself up here.
Yeah.
It's not gonna be.
Do you need a minute?
No, we're good. I was gonna do it. Never mind.
I'm trying to think of what to say. What should I say to sign off?
What do you mean?
Of this podcast.
Well, you always say.
I'll just go with Micah 6:8.
Can I touch the hands?
Are you kidding me?
That could be your new sign off. all right. Will you please send us out?
Do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with thy God.
We'll see you on the other side of Sunday.